This is it, folks. The final episode before JR's vaunted return. Whatever. He's back next week with some new episodes. So check us out then. But until then, let's return to our very first episode from 5-ish years ago. Sure. It's not too bad. I was actually surprised listening to it, how good it was. I mean, definitely long-winded, and we wouldn't do it like that today, but it's something. You'll see. So, enjoy this, and see y'all next week for a brand new episode.
Okay, we both hit the record button. World. Listen, world, we're on.
Prepare to have your ears rocked by some horror in your ears.
That is redundant but true.
Yes.
So, hello everybody, potential prospective listeners who may be listening to this, assuming it's of decent enough quality to ever see the light of day.
Well, of course it will be. Why would we produce anything that wasn't of the most decent quality?
How do we explain every other project we've worked on?
100% successes, that's why we would explain them. Solid gold.
We were just speaking about, I feel like we should have recorded that conversation, because I feel like our entire prospective audience is going to be wannabes like us who want to make a podcast but don't really know what they're doing.
Yep,
and so yes. Our discussion about whether or not you have to hit the record button at the same time, otherwise you destroy the podcast, could have been useful to other people.
And whether you start counting from one or count down from five.
Assuming
it's a very important thing. Perhaps it tells us about our personalities.
Assuming we get an audience, hopefully one of the members of that audience will be able to answer this question. Now all you have to do is come up with a website and come up with a name and have ways for them to reach us, and we'll get our answer.
Yep, then money, $1 million, retire. Boom, that's it.
I just see a chalkboard with a lot of question marks.
Podcast plus question mark equals $$$$.
So we should introduce ourselves to the people. My name is J.R. Hamantaschen. I am a marginally popular writer, as I describe myself to people who find out I'm a writer, to kind of lower their expectations. You might have heard of me on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, which is where we've taken our name, the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast version 2.
Hopefully, hopefully they don't mind. Or the original H.P. Lovecraft podcast.
We're working on getting that cleared with them, but I'm assuming it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So in 2011... I had a book of short stories called You Shall Never Know Security that was marginally popular and made the rounds on a couple websites. And as of October 1st, 2015, my second collection came out with it's such a long title that sometimes I even forget what it is. It's called With a Voice That Is Often Still Confused But Is Becoming Ever Louder and Clear. It was reviewed in Scream Magazine, Starburst Magazine, mentioned on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. It's gotten some good press. I'm happy with it. Hopefully, if people have heard of me, if they're listening to this.
And these are whimsical children's books full of mirth for the whole family?
They're children's books.
Uh-huh.
What kind of child?
The best kind of child.
A child who matures quickly, who's seen a lot, who is, lived fast and died young.
Burn the candle at both ends, that kind of thing. Too old to rock and roll, too young to die.
The kind of child you read about.
Yep.
Or you hear about.
After a mass shooting.
I mean, if one child could do that and have my book next to, be found next to the suicide note, I would be top of the Kindle list.
Yeah, definitely.
That was pretty, it's pretty not insensitive. I'm not really like that.
No,
let me introduce you. Or actually, you could fucking introduce yourself.
That's what I'm here for. My name is Derek Sotak. I write for the website Notronomics.com, which is also whimsical family fun, but about nachos.
Yours actually is whimsical family fun, sort of.
I mean, I guess. I'm not dropping the F-bomb and racial epithets or anything, so I guess that's family fun? I don't know. It tells you where to go and get some good nachos and about nachos.
You should have said, spoiler alert, I haven't dropped the racial hatred yet. You ruined the end of the podcast.
We've just started. We could say some stuff. But yeah, so that started in 2011, 2012, one of those. And I've also written the books The Field Guide to Nachos and Nachos and You, Living Your Life One Chip at a Time, or Living Your Life the Nacho Way. I don't remember.
What about, wait, did you mention Nachonomics?
Yeah, that's the first thing I mentioned.
Oh, wait, Nachonomicon? Did you mention that?
Well, we want to tell how our met. How our
Well, that's the... That's, I mean, the wait, juicy story? That's not how we met.
At Necronomicon?
Do I know you?
Do I know you?
Is this the wrong... I thought your picture was of a snarling bully. I thought it was going to be of a big smiling nacho.
Nope.
I think I got the wrong nacho author. Can I quickly add before we clarify that I made that insensitive, jokey comment about the suicides, but one thing I'm always surprised about by a little bit of my readership is that, I mean, this is a very, very, very small portion of them, but sometimes I get emails that just imagine me as being some kind of, like, horribly insensitive, violence-loving person.
And they're only half right.
I do love violence, but I'm not insensitive.
If anything, you're overly sensitive.
That's true. I am... If anyone gets a hint of me from my writing, it is I am depressed, anxious, and overly sensitive. I just wrote my tombstone right there.
And if anyone gets anything about me from my writing, it's that nacho. I enjoy nachos. Yeah, pretty much it.
There's already a conflict brewing because I can't say that I'm the biggest. I told you this. I let out all the secrets before we agreed to this. It took you.
It almost ruined our friendship.
I know, it took you a while to come to terms with this, but I am not a fan of nachos. Well, I should say I'm on the fence about nachos. I mean,
see, I think you just had some bad nachos in the past. You know, they've ruined your outlook going forward on nachos. You just need like a nice nachos to bring home to your parents and say, "Mom and Dad, I found these nachos. They're delicious. They've changed my life."
I feel like if I said I found these nachos, they're not eating them.
Well, you may want to specify where exactly you found them.
This is the thing. I thought all nachos were shitty. Like, I thought that was part of the nachos.
Oh, my
friend. It's like,
no.
They're shitty, cheap, garbage food with cheese and
I think
peppers.
You need to check your privilege when it comes to nachos and what it comes down to. You just become accustomed to the trashy nachos that have pervaded the nacho landscape.
No, wait. If I was privileged, if I wasn't privileged, I'd be eating nachos all the time. Because I'd have nothing left. I have nothing else to eat because nachos are cheap ass food.
Well, if you want to get cheap, crummy nachos, yes. No. But if you want the good stuff, the caviar, lobster, whatever nachos, those ones cost you the dollars.
So,
just getting back on topic. How did we meet?
Yeah, I should add. So I write dark fiction and horror, and you write your stuff is. You know, you have...
I guess fiction, nacho-based cosmic fiction.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the wheelhouse of Lovecrafty homage fiction, you know? I mean, I kind of write, like, the pure stuff, and you're kind of, like, goofing around with that shit.
I get the watered-down stuff.
Live and die by this stuff. I mean, no judgments, but...
No.
All the judgments. But
we're saying you probably come to this podcast for the horror and not the nachos. Nachos just a bonus.
Fair. So you're a horror influenced guy. We met at the Necronomicon 2015.
Yep.
Which is, if you are not familiar, is a H.P. Lovecraft convention that is held in Providence, Rhode Island. There have been two of them. I spoke at the 2013 one, and it was disastrous.
That's actually the first time that I saw you, because I had read your book previous to going there, and then I went to the panel, and I didn't realize you were on, and they announced you. And I was like, oh, that's him? Okay.
Why, did you expect me to be better? Like, I don't think attractive charmer is the impression one gets from reading.
You just looked very ill and depressed and did not want to be there. That was my impressions that I got at the time.
I was upset because, and here's where, if I had done research, I'd be able to talk well on this, but the moderator, who's actually, like, apparently an author who people have heard of, apparently she's a Lewis Gresh. Is that her? She's like a real author person that people know of. I've never heard of before, but that doesn't mean anything because I don't really read a lot of fiction, ironically enough. But it was just poorly moderated, and it was a fucking disaster. And I looked disappointed the whole time and said, although in fairness, I looked disappointed and said all the time. So that wasn't. It's not really a distinguishing factor there. But The thing didn't go well, but lo and behold, who was in the audience but my future Derek Zotac. It would take 2 more years for us to meet.
Yep.
2 more fateful years at Necronomicon 2015 when our good friends, and who ask us to name drop them as often as possible, probably, Chris Lackey and Chad Pfeiffer from the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, brought us together at lunch.
Yep.
Sparks flew. I was surprised we ate lunch, and you ordered an appetizer of nachos, and then a meal of nachos, and then nachos for dessert. And I said, this is a man who lives his art.
It is true. You live by the nachos, you probably die of heart failure or diabetes.
You certainly die by the nachos. We kept in touch, and he said he had a dying make-a-wish dream of starting a podcast with somebody. Who's going to do it? No one's around. No one's interested. Who has all the time in the world? Me.
That here is we are. Verbatim, 100% what happened.
just introducing who we are. This is us. This is our first. This is like, if there's going to be episode 1 next time, this is like episode 00.
Yeah, this is the pilot episode, if you will. This is the one that the studio goes and goes, oh man, we can't put this on TV. Not even like on Fox.
Little did
Fox
they
made trashy shows.
Little did they know, it's not on TV. So.
No.
That's how we
stuck it to the big studios. Ha ha.
So we're gonna talk about horror related things, the horror world, horror movies, horror fiction, horror podcasts, which means we're just gonna self reference exactly what we're doing because this is technically a horror podcast. I'll reveal the inner workings and secrets of the small press horror world. I'll name names like the moderator I just named, whose name I don't actually remember, but I named name
Rock
by referencing her. So look up the moderator at the Providence Necronomicon 2013 panel. Naming names already. We named Chris Lackey. We named Chad Pfeiffer. I named myself. I named you. That's 4 names.
A regular bunch of name-dropping starfuckers, like we are.
Well, I haven't fucked them yet, except myself. I fucked myself all, many times, but you're in... Oh, I should add, I live in New York City.
I live in Boston, Massachusetts.
That's a lie. Yeah. That's a lie.
I live close to Boston, Massachusetts, in a town you wouldn't have heard of.
No, fuck.
No, that's
heard
not
of
true.
That. It's the second largest city in Massachusetts. I heard of it.
Okay. Well, I live in Worcester, Massachusetts. Maybe
there
you know where that
go.
Is. We have. It's known as the Paris of the 80s. I couldn't tell you why, but I do
the
like
Paris
that slogan.
Paris of the 80s?
Paris of the 80s. And it has a statue of a boy fucking a turtle.
That is
so
true. I have seen
that's
that
our
statue.
Claim to fame.
That's a true thing. Look it up. Google.
There was a toilet museum here, too, but it closed down.
Man, things ain't going well for Worcester.
No, let me tell you. Oof. And the property taxes I pay, outrageous.
You also had a famous comedian from Worcester, Massachusetts, who I actually know of, but whose name escapes me right now. So that factoid is lost. But there actually is a really... He was the guy in The Man Show who wasn't Joe Rogan, who's the other guy. You know?
Adam Carolla?
No, dude, we're talking about different eras. Originally, it was Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla, and then Joe Rogan and other guy.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Is our intern
Stanhope?
Is our intern here?
Doug
Stanhope? Doug Stanhope.
Oh, I didn't know we came from.
Where the fuck is our intern? Did you just hear me drop something?
Yeah, I thought that you were doing some stage work. Oh, he's running up on a horse right now. Oh no, he just went away on his horse.
That was actually pretty good. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of a topic. You know?
Yes.
Talked about horror. We tempted the audience with horror talk. We haven't delivered yet.
No.
The one thing that I'm always interested in, and so interested in that I wrote a story about it, is, you know, obviously people find H.P. Lovecraft very fascinating and are attracted by his cosmic philosophy. You know, this kind of belief that the world and the universe is kind of meaningless, that there's no order to it. If you've read any of his letters, you're well aware of this as philosophy. You know that there's no divine plan. His Lovecraftian monsters are kind of a stand-in for this random, hopeless universe where humans are just a tiny, insignificant pawns and machinations far beyond their control. And I've been interested because I have a fair amount of friends on the, dark fiction world, either writers or filmmakers or whatnot, and I've always been, like, they'll agree, they are attracted to Lovecraft in large part because they agree with his philosophy, and I always find it somewhat odd that a lot of them have children, which I always found to be something. It's either they don't have the courage of their convictions or they're hypocrites. This is why I don't have any friends, is what I'm revealing. But
I think
always...
there's a lot of things where, you know, do as I say, don't say as I do.
But does that just make them hypocrites? Like, I feel like anyone who has children, if I know that they have children and they write a story where they're trying to sell me on the premise of some kind of Lovecraftian cosmic horror, I don't believe it, and I don't buy it, and it's not authentic.
Well, like, you could still have kids and, you know, enjoy your children and have a awesome life just with the knowledge that nothing's coming after this. And when you die, that's it.
No, I mean, isn't it worse than that, though? Like, I don't think, you know, the raison d'etre or other pretentious words of Lovecraft were simply like, oh, you know, life is neither great nor terrible, but, I mean... he kind of had this, like, overriding horror, you know, how it's better to be a contented cat and the greatest thing for humankind would be to extinguish itself and all of that. And many of these supposed Lovecraftians who, you know, might nod their heads to this kind of, you know, philosophical ruminations, then kind of, like, laugh, skip, and have children. It just seems kind of odd to people who supposedly agree with Lovecraft. Like, what's your view of Lovecraft's philosophy? Like you buy into it?
Pretty firm in the belief that, like, oh, this is it, and there's nothing out there. And when you die, you just kind of go away. But really, you guys are going to have to deal with that? Or why do you continue living at that point?
Like, well, not even just, like, atheism, but, like, the value of human achievement. Like, the long-lasting, long-standing value of human achievement, the existence of, like, some kind of objective morality... stuff like that. Like, I feel like if you don't really buy into that, or some, like, inkling of a greater purpose, or some kind of greater something beyond our experiences, then the idea of having children really seems kind of cruel.
That they just have to, they're just there to suffer while they're waiting till they die.
But you don't have, you don't have children, right?
No, I don't have any children that I know of.
Do you plan on having children?
Probably not.
Well, like, where is that little percentage point that you might have children?
I guess if it happened accidentally. That would be, I guess, probably a thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe if I, like, if I settled down and got my nice little white picket fence and someone was like, here's the sack of money for making an awesome podcast. Take it and never have to work again and all your problems are solved. And I could go, oh, okay, I feel like I'm in a stable place to have a child.
So, is the reason you don't want to have children because, like, you currently lack financial stability? Is that that's the only thing preventing you from having a child?
I don't think it's the only thing, but...
I heard it's people definitely, need partners.
Yes, that usually helps when producing a child.
But, like,
so,
even,
yes, that too, but, like, I don't know.
I've always said to people, like, I don't see a value in creating human life in, like, kind of a jokey fashion. But it's also true. Like, H.P. Lovecraft philosophy or cosmicism, whatever you want to call it, I don't want to say I buy into it, but I agree with the premise and the conclusions. I mean, Lovecraft himself, if you remember, like, he wasn't... I mean, there's this idea of him in the popular mythos of him being, like, this... completely dour, isolated loser. But, you know, in reality, he had friends, he liked his regional travel, he was obviously well-read, he found some kind, he loved architecture, he found some kind of an enjoyment out of life. Even he found that when you kind of add up the pluses and the minuses are so overwhelming.
He did also have, like, a terrible upbringing, which I'm sure... definitely shaped him in his later life. Like, if he lived in a happy family with a bunch of kids and parents that didn't go insane and weird aunts, he might have been a happier sort of fellow.
I understand what you're saying, but I think that, you know, the keenness of his mind and his just interest in broad reading and the philosophies that he was attuned to, like, I kind of think he would have come to those, like, I don't want to say there's something inherent to his spirit or anything silly like that, but man, my voice just turned. My voice got real serious. I was channeling.
You're becoming
like
a man.
But I guess, I mean, yeah, I just don't, I mean, I think, I mean, I don't know, I just don't buy into that. I don't really have, I mean, if only you had St. Joshi on the line to,
if only he would know all the secrets.
To mock us and make patronizing comments about us, which is, or to write vitriolic posts about us. But that's another. We should get to the subject about them changing the World Fantasy Award to get rid of Lovecraft's image next time.
Ooh, spoiler alert for episode future one.
Yeah, we got to get someone on here who has choose a avowed Lovecraftian who has children,
mm-hmm.
and then yell at them.
Well, maybe they'll even have, like, a good reason. A reason that will go, oh man, I've been so wrong and bigoted in my opinions my entire life.
But, yeah,
I'm
going to
change
not...
them right now and sire a child.
I feel like it's not reconcilable. Like, you can't be a Lovecraftian who has children. Like, I don't think it works.
All right, you read a lot of his stuff. Like, how did he interact with friends who had kids? Assuming he had any friends who had kids.
I honestly don't know. I mean, that doesn't necessarily, like, he obviously, you don't have to be, like, irrationally spiteful.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't
children.
Like,
you don't have to, like, spit in the face of children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could, but you don't have to.
That's just a bonus if you want to.
I mean, if
it's
anything,
America,
he was probably, I imagine, like, you're very sympathetic to children, like, especially children who don't really understand what's happening to them or don't mm-hmm. understand, you know, the what agony's life has in store for them. yeah, I don't really know how he acted toward people with children. I hope disdainfully.
Who can say? He did love Christmas and ice cream, just like a child. And had the eating habits of a child, so.
Did he love Christmas because it was a holiday that was... Wait, did he really love Christmas? Is that true?
Oh yeah, he loved Christmas.
Is that because it was a Christian holiday?
I don't know. He seemed to enjoy more, like, from the poetry of his that he did about Christmas.
What was
sort of, like, the pagan aspects of it.
What were his feelings on Kwanzaa?
I do not believe Kwanzaa was around when he was. And
otherwise,
I'm sure he would not have had positive opinions about them, if so.
No. He did marry a half-Jew, though.
He did. So,
yeah.
He probably went to,
And his, racism lessened a fair amount in his later years, supposedly.
Yeah.
Half Jew. That's such a weird term. It's like sounds like a fucking orc, like a halfling, like a half Jew. The fuck does that even mean? As a Jew, I could say comments like this. If my
okay.
last name of Humintoshin didn't give it away. For the people out there, and if you don't live on the coasts, and you haven't experienced a Jew or experienced a Humintoshin is a delicious triangular cookie that Jews eat on Purim. To celebrate something. See, I'm a Reformed Jew, so I don't know actually what they celebrate, but I know enough that they celebrate something. And
something with costumes.
Is that true? Yeah, they
I thought it was like
in temple.
It
they
was
a
vaguely
party.
Or Halloween had some vaguely similar traits with it, despite being two entirely separate things.
I think they at synagogue or the temple they celebrate that they weren't killed by somebody, and they hiss the bad guy, and they cheer for the good guy, and they drink it. I think that's true. They get drunk. They have a lot of fun.
Oh,
it
is this the
cool.
You have to drink till you can't tell somebody from somebody else?
Yeah, something like that. So
okay.
Well,
that sounds like a pretty happening holiday.
I should add that the reason my pseudonym, it's not my real name, is J.R. Humintosh.
What?
It's because...
All these lies? All these years?
Back in the day of the short fiction world that I was a part of, I would get stories unpublished through, like, Duotrope and Roslons and all these, you know. Yeah, I don't know if you heard of those sites. Those are sites
I
where you used to find what short fiction markets were looking for stories.
Okay.
Now, I would always change my name because I don't really fucking care. I didn't have a website. I don't really give a shit. I still don't have a website. But I always change the name all the time. And one time I had a story published under J.R. Humintosh in the story Wonder, which appears in You Shall Never Know Security, which was then later... I was approached to have it turned into a podcast, like an audiobook podcast, whatever, from the Drabblecast, which is a great, a great podcast in its own right, if you've heard of the Drabblecast. It was nope. popular. You've never heard of it?
No.
Have you heard of Pseudopod?
The podcast? Or what else the physical thing?
Fuck it. Either.
The latter.
You never heard of the podcast Pseudopod? You kind of heard of it.
Familiar.
Okay, well, Drabblecast, right, I think, is the second most popular one after Pseudopod. Anyway, the story was popular. I got a book deal there at the end. And I stuck with Jerahom and Dushan because it sounds cool. And I could tell if somebody's familiar with Jews or not because they'll say Hamentation if they never they don't know the book of Hamentation. So that my sensor's
very
still up.
Sneaky.
I kind of want to. So this can all be edited out, right? It's dead space, right?
Yeah, here. Sure. Why not?
Do you have anything else to add?
What was the idea we had for another episode?
The HBO World Fantasy Award thing.
Oh yes, okay.
You heard about that, right?
Yeah. I think they brought that up at the last Dragonomaton too.
We don't want to spoil it all. It's already 32 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you're going 32 minutes? No, that's the other thing. This is only at 25 minutes and 31 seconds.
Oh, okay. I thought the whole
You're looking pod. At the Skype, not the recording.
I feel like 25 minutes isn't bad for a first prelude episode.
Yeah, and we can totally edit all this out. Or just leave it in.
I should... Whatever. Yeah, fuck, who cares? I should add, who are your favorite authors? Horror authors.
Horror authors.
I don't care about fucking Judy Blume.
Oh, but Fudge Forever. That was such a good book. Super Fudge? That was Judy Blume? Whatever. I like me a Stephen King, which I think is probably not shocking to anyone in the horror community. I like me a Lovecraft. Most of the Lovecraft mythos authors I do enjoy. Laird Barron, I just been getting into him.
He's a good writer, he's a nice guy.
So yeah, I'd say those.
I really like Ted Klein a lot. He's one of my favorite authors. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say I was one of your favorite authors, asshole.
Well, I didn't want to, you know, gild your lily. Is that what they're calling it these days?
I thought gilding lily means something you can't improve. It's already perfect. You can't improve upon it. That's what it actually means.
Oh, well, then.
You mean
that's
suck.
Just
you,
like you said, that's just like you, JR.
You're trying to say you don't want to suck my dick? Is that what you're actually trying to say? You're trying to the PG rating's gone already.
Yes, we got the chili peppers in our rating.
What does that mean?
In Eudora back in the day, they rated their stuff. If there was spicy content, they put on chili peppers. Just so you'd be aware of the spicy content. But
I thought you were making a blood, sex, sugar, magic reference. We do have a lot of that in here so far. Okay, so I like Ted Klein a lot. I'm a big fan of him. I also admire him. What I find, do you know Ted Klein? Ted Klein's great.
I have not read anything of his. So
you've heard of the name, right?
Yeah.
He actually has he's only written like a handful. He has one novel, The Ceremonies, which actually I don't think is the best representation of his work. I'm not actually a big fan of the novel. But some of his novellas and short fiction is fantastic. He has a collection of novellas called Dark Gods, which is phenomenal. It has a story called Black Man with a Horn, one of the best Lovecraftian stories I've ever read.
Oh, I read that in Cthulhu 2000, which is my first Lovecraft.
That is my first Lovecraft.
Was that like the only Lovecraft book your library had?
Because
that's how I
came
across it.
Oh, that's a good... Dude, that's a good topic, how we came across Lovecraft.
All right, well...
Should we do that right now?
Let's do it.
I mean, or we went from it. Two listeners to one, so we already lost 50% of our audience. I had known about Lovecraft for... I mean, I've heard of him for a long time from, you know, my teen years. I, like you, read a fair amount of horror. Like, I read Clive Barker. I read Stephen King. I liked Harlan Ellison a lot. And if you know Harlan Ellison, he's great.
Yeah.
He's written like 800,000 novels.
Yep,
sure. Yeah.
Did you do know. Most of Twilight Zone?
No, but he wrote supposedly the best episode.
Okay.
Which is City on the Edge of Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which he then disowned because they changed key components of it. And then him and Rod Serling had a fight that lasted for the millennium.
That's a long time.
Harlan Ellison's great. Stephen King, Clive Barker, you know, all the... Even
Dean Koontz?
I read Phantoms, man.
Phantoms like a mofo.
Dean Koontz. Yeah, actually, I did read a little Dean Koontz. You know, all the normal shit, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was maybe 17 or so, and I had heard of H.P. Lovecraft, but I never bothered to check anything out until I played a game called Eternal Darkness Sanity's Requiem. You ever hear of that?
I have heard of
it. It was a GameCube game that was, like, heavily Lovecraftian inspired. There was a kind of same Lovecraft's, like, I think it even took place in Rhode Island. It spanned multiple generations of people dealing with these, like, cosmic beasties and everything like that. And I really liked the game a lot, so I thought, hey, you know, now's the... And I looked it up online, and they said all these Lovecraft references, and I heard Lovecraft referenced so many times in all this other fiction that, you know, I figured, why not? I should just go buy Lovecraft. So I went into... I was 18 years old, and I could actually pinpoint the day that I bought it if I really wanted to, because I remember I took it on my first final in college, the same day. I bought Cthulhu 2000, not realizing it wasn't actually Lovecraft stories. It was a collection of authors inspired by Lovecraft. Mm. And I bought another collection that was Lovecraft, but it was, like, his earliest stuff. It was, like, you know those collections where it's, like, hey, you like the really famous stories, now read the Juvenilia he wrote when he was, like, 14. So the first Lovecraft story I wrote was The Beast in the Cave. Which I actually liked, you know, some people... He was, 15 when he wrote that? It's pretty goddamn impressive. But even I remember reading that, and I was like, you know, then obviously I read, like, Call of Cthulhu and The Outsider and the better stuff, supposedly. Well, it is the better stuff. And
no, supposedly about it.
No. What do you think? Black Man with a Horn, it's a good story. You have a problem with it?
No, like, there were a pretty decent number of stories in that Cthulhu 2000 were good. But there are also a lot that were not good.
Yeah. Oh, man, there was one that was so awful in that story.
His Mouth Will Taste of Wormwood? Is that one?
I don't know. Is that the one where they meet, like, the aliens that look like stars and, like, it's called... No, I'm thinking the one that calls Meet You on the Other Side or something.
Oh,
the Wormwood one is by a famous author, though, right? It's by...
Maybe?
Who wrote that? I feel like it's, like, a name... I remember that one being a named author. Let me just look it up, and so that we could find who else will never be on this podcast.
I'm gonna tell him. Derek Sotak. That's right. The author of Nostradamus.
Wait, what is the story, name again?
Was not good.
Her mouth
His
was
mouth
made
will
of...
taste of wormwood, I think.
Kind of a cool title. Okay, amuse yourself for a second.
Okay.
Oh, Poppy Z. Bright.
Okay, yeah, that is someone I've heard of.
She also wrote the story, and yeah, I don't remember that story, but she wrote a book I read once and didn't like it, called, I think, Lost Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, is that the most generic name someone can come up with for anything?
Ghost story.
I feel like Ghost Story is more knowing than that. It's, like, more clever. Yeah.
Spooky. But
why did you not like that story?
The book. I don't remember.
Don't back
But
down.
I don't think I've read
down.
It in, like, you know, 20 years since I first read it. Because, you know, you're a wee youngin'.
Were you 13 when you read it?
I was probably, like, 14. Cause
dude, let's hear
how
your
How I came across
Lovecraft.
Lovecraft was I lived in England in the early 90s.
Wait, like, real England?
Yeah, like, London. Not like, I don't know, Sussex, that's a place, Surrey, no, in London. And one of my friends was like,
hey, don't
hello,
up.
Hello, look what I got here, it's the Call of Cthulhu RPG game.
Wait, I thought you said England, not Australia and cartoons.
No, it's, I lived in Cockney, England in the 1800s. Okay. I was a shoeshine boy and a chimney sweep. But I had never heard of Lovecraft at the time, and I said, what the shit is this? And then I was like, this is some crazy stuff. And then I came back to America, and I was like, I need to know more about this Lovecraft. And I went down to the library, and all they had was Cthulhu 2000. And I was like, this must be it. And it turned out it wasn't.
What
and
was I the said, first story you read of Lovecraft's?
Probably Call of Cthulhu. Because basically I picked up the... Cthulhu 2000, and I said, oh, this is not actually any real Lovecraft. I should pick up some real Lovecraft.
That's
so I went to the bookstore.
Lovecraft.
Yeah. And like, I don't know if you remember the editions they had that were like, they looked like the heavy metal album art covers. They were just all like weird stuff. There were like three of those that had all his non-Juvenalia stuff. So probably,
I think I know
like,
exactly
the best
which
stuff
you're talking
ones.
About.
Yeah, yeah.
One
so
was
probably
like...
just called Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Like, Tales of Madness and Terror, I think was the name of one of them. And
did it have, like, the guy that looks like he's flashing, but he's just a skeleton underneath? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, a big purple
one of those
spider.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of eyeballs and weird bugs and stuff.
Some good stuff, man.
Yep. And I said, this cover really has not a lot to do with the stories inside, but it's badass nonetheless.
So what about Clive Barker? You a fan of Clive Barker's?
I do like some stuff of Clive Barker's.
I'm the same way, man. Early stuff, good. Later stuff.
Yeah, so I just, what was the one that you just did with Pinhead?
Oh yeah, but everyone, I think that's universally hated.
Yeah. Like yeah. That
one. Did you read it?
I did read it, because I was like, oh, Pinhead versus the guy from, not Wishmaster, Dreamweaver? No, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that guy. Scott Bakula.
Scott Bakula, yes, him.
Yeah. Apparently our podcast is just bashing more famous writers than this podcast.
Lord of Illusions.
That's there we go. I like that movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I remember it being good. I don't remember the book being anything like the movie, but I still enjoy it nonetheless.
Well, it's a novella. It's not a...
Yeah.
Yeah, Books of Blood were fantastic.
Yeah, were good, yes. I like a Nightbreed.
Okay. I saw the movie and not too impressed.
Oh, there's like a better version.
Yeah,
like
the director's cut.
Oh, it's better, I think.
Yeah, but I love early Clive Barker. I loved Harlan Ellison, who's a big fan of mine, and kind of, I don't want to say a personal inspiration because it sounds cheesy and is also not true, so I don't even know why I said it. But I do kind of like all the kind of, you know, he's very aggressive in the sense that, you know, he really cares about what he's writing about. He's kind of like in your face, but not in a Mountain Dew kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Not an extreme in your face.
No, but he's just, you know, he really cares about what he's doing, which I really appreciate. He writes a lot of different styles, and I appreciate that. So I always liked Harlan Ellison. I always liked Dennis Etchison. You ever hear of him?
He
wrote a lot of novelizations of movies, but he also wrote a lot of short fiction, and it's very kind of like creepy and sad and like quiet, like kind of like quiet in a depressing way. Uh-huh. Sometimes not a lot happens, but he wrote one story that's really phenomenal. I mean, he wrote many stories that are very good, but the one he's probably most famous for is one called The Dog Park, that is always kind of like a... It's so well executed, it's always kind of like the story I wish I could write. But I can't write it because he already wrote it, and it's called The Dog Park. So every story I write that's called The Dog Park and is the same story word for word, people keep calling me out on it. And I'm like, I'm just trying to recreate the magic.
Yeah, it's a reboot. People are all about those.
If it's a reboot, I feel like it has to be in the spirit of reboots and just be... Yeah, it's exactly... It's longer and dumber and louder.
Exactly.
It's exactly... I just rewrite the story, but it's in, like, 42-size font.
Yep.
So, who else? Lovecraft. But not only Lovecraft's fiction, but I'm really into Lovecraft. I mean, he's one of the most prolific letter writers of, like, in the Western world. So just reading his... I'm really into Lovecraft's letters, and also I'm into non-horror that has kind of horrific overtones. There's this like this Japanese author who wrote a book called The Setting Sun and No Longer Human, which are kind of like existentially depressive Japanese novels. Well, I guess they're Japanese novels because they're written by a Japanese person. But, you know, also like Camus and Sartre and all those existentialists. Mm-hmm. So, and even like Revolutionary Road, like you ever read Revolutionary Road and not just see the movie starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, all these name drops. We should just put Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet in the metadata for the podcast.
See what we can bring in.
But
I have seen the movie, but I have not read the book.
Yeah, by Richard Yates. It's like stuff like that I love also. That's like, or like Jude the Obscure. Have you read Jude the Obscure? Like that's more horrific in a way than 99.99% of the horror literature that's out there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you wouldn't think about it because you might have to read about it, read it in middle school or something, but it's like I really love fiction like that, that kind of isn't in the ambit of horror, but kind of gives you the same existential turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I really wish that fiction could do, or like how fiction could be packaged, was like one of my not dreams, but something I'd really love to see or take part in would be like a fiction collection where you don't know the genre of the stories before you read them.
You just want some stranger on the street to come up to you and say, "Here, kid, read this."
Well, and it depends. It's just a bunch of stories. Depends if the guy's got a track record. Notice, like a fiction collection where like they don't give away the synopsis of the novel, or they don't give away a synopsis of every story, and it's like cross-genre, so it's not just like thriller, horror, whatnot, but there's you don't know what mood you're going to be in when you start reading the stories. Mm-hmm. You kind of just follow along with the stories and experience it completely fresh. And that means, like, even if it's a collection of multiple horror fiction or whatnot, you don't have a description, like a little synopsis of each story before you read it, because even that, I feel like, kind of spoils it, you know? Mm-hmm. If you hear it's like, oh, this is a story about coming back from the dead, it's like, oh, well, they're gonna die at some point and come back. It's like, you know it's gonna happen, a little bit. And I really wish, even if it's like romance, or horror, or thriller, or just kind of like even New Yorkery fiction, just like, you don't exactly know what's going to happen in a collection. I really, it's kind of a little bit of something I'm trying to shoot for in my collection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm succeeding or not.
I mean, succeeding in quality, definitely, for sure. But I don't know, I think...
What am I not succeeding in? I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, they're not all horror fiction.
No, but there's definitely... There's a certain tone to them, I feel.
Well, because I wrote all of them.
Yeah. But it's not like, oh, this one... I did have many a good chuckle in many of them, but I wouldn't say it ran the gamut across
that's
all
fair,
the
that's
stuff.
That's fair. I did actually...
But, you know, that's not what you were going for.
I did write a kind of, like, creepy, sweet story about a boy and his dog that wasn't featured in any other collections. I feel like it just went tonally work.
Mm-hmm.
But I do try and branch out a little bit. I mean, I think the last collection had a little bit more, like, I don't want to talk about my own collections. I'll let the fans do that.
Well, I think just in general, if you write 10 stories, the royal you, if you will, not you, JR, that if you have, all right, here's 10 stories, each one of them is a different genre, how do you market
that? Yeah, no one would buy
it. Like, where does that go in the bookstore?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Yeah. Well, one, they're not getting in bookstores to begin with, let's be honest. yeah, I mean, that's probably the primary reason. People have niches, and you got to market to niches, so
exactly.
That's the reason why. Like, yeah. I was a part of a collection that was, it's called For When the Veil Drops. That
oh,
was like,
I have that.
Oh, man, look at you. No wonder you got this podcast.
Yeah.
You did win the biggest fan award, and this was the prize. This was the prize and the punishment.
Yep.
So let me beam in the loser of that competition as well. Yeah, so that was the goal of that was to try and have, like, a very broad base of stories that were tonally different. Some were funny, some were horrific, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was a giant bomb, so... We never pursued something like that ever again.
It did seem like they were setting up for more of those, but...
I haven't seen any. Apparently, you can't pay professional rates to writers if you want to make money back.
That makes sense.
Learned. Which is very sad, because I had a part in the editorial process of that, and we tried to pick good stories, and I think mm-hmm. we did. One of the stories, the one that I wrote, was later formatted a little bit and changed up and added to my second collection, and I'm pretty proud of that one. There was also a lot of other good stories by authors like Michael Wehunt, and other people who I should know their names, but I don't. Doug Morano, Sam Minier, people you should check out. Michael Wehunt is actually having his first collection come out soon with Shock Totem Press in April. We're going to have him on the show to talk about it in many months, assuming you
should
consent.
Probably read more about him by then.
Yeah.
That would be the polite thing to do.
So, yeah, it's giving a little indication. We'll have other authors on soon, Canadian authors who are popular. We have a lot in store, Canada, America.
A real That's North it? American melange.
Yeah, well, I didn't fucking say Mexico, Derek. I didn't say Mexico.
Maybe I'll bring on a famous Mexican author.
Well, you do love nachos.
It's true.
Although nachos were not made in Mexico.
Yes, they were.
They were?
Yeah, they're
Was your
from
book
Mexico.
Full of fake facts?
No, my book's full of real facts. It said they're made in nachos.
I thought the whole shtick you had about nachos was they weren't authentic Mexican food.
No, nachos are authentic Mexican food. American nachos are not authentic Mexican food.
What's
the
difference?
The stadium nachos.
What's the difference between American nachos and Mexican nachos?
So, like, the Mexican nachos are made from, like, actual tortillas and cooked and used regular ingredients, like natural stuff. And the American one that we're accustomed to are, like, the concession nachos they have at the movie theater or sports arenas, where it's like, oh, here's some shitty round chips and some glowing orange slop we're going to throw on top.
So if it was
Scarf it down, America.
So if it wasn't tortilla chips, but was it like tortilla rolls or something? What the fuck is that? Tortilla?
No, like, they basically took a tortilla and cut it up into, like, chips and then would fry those.
So that's not real nachos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those are, like, the first nachos, difference. So. Hey, it's what it takes in food. Just one little thing. One little thing makes a difference.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that nachos... Do people eat nachos for, like, an actual meal? Like, dinner nachos?
I mean, I eat nachos for an
actual
meal.
If you think about it, like, what is pizza? It's just fucking bread and cheese.
Yeah. There's, like, a whole lot of foods that are pretty much, oh, this is the exact same ingredients, just cut up in a slightly different way or cooked in a slightly different order, is what it comes down to.
I remember an argument I had with a friend of mine who fucking have these stupid arguments all the time. I think I argued, like, oh, a cheese sandwich isn't a thing. Like, people don't eat cheese sandwiches.
Like a grilled cheese? Ungrilled cheese?
I know, you already beat me in the argument. But he was like, oh, I could have a sandwich. He was like, you could put cheese. I'm like, cheese is not a fucking sandwich. And he was like, what's pizza then? I was like, I think my argument was like, people don't just fucking eat bread and cheese. And he was like, what's pizza? And I was like, damn it. So that was not one of my proudest moments. And also, you know that story, The Gulf of Responsibility, that was in my second collection?
What happened in it?
There was an Indian guy named Kevin in it. It was the story with the social worker.
Oh, yeah.
I like that one a lot. But anyway, that character, that Kevin, is based off this real guy, Kevin, who had the argument with. So by mentioning him, I'm assuring us at least one listener.
Part one of listener my plan. For one episode.
And also, I opened myself to lawsuits because he was like, I don't know how I feel about being mentioned in this story. And I was like, no one's going to know who you are. And I just...
Should we beep out his name? That's probably technology we have access to, right?
Yeah. So, it'll be worth it for that. That's how desperate we are for one listener.
Yes.
But
yes, nachos made in Mexico by a Mexican with Mexican ingredients. So, that's Mexican, right?
One thing, just to change really subject really quick, about writing. We actually get on horror and writing a little bit.
Yeah. You know what this podcast is actually going to be about?
That's got to get a feel for us, man. That's what I used to tell myself. Once people get to know me, they'll like me, right? So 31 years still hasn't worked, but fingers
one
are still
day,
crossed.
One day.
Do your parents read your writing at all, or like they know about your writing or anything like that?
Yeah, they do. So my mom, you know, she backed the books, and she has those.
Ooh,
but I don't
what,
think.
What do you mean, backed the books?
Like when I had them on Kickstarter originally, when I was like, I want to make these books. Give me some money to make them.
Be honest, was her contribution more than 10%?
No, it was
5%.
No, the first one did pretty well, so I don't remember what she gave, but it was probably the base. So let's say 1/600.
Okay, that's respectable.
Yeah,
I never told my parents about any of it, as you could probably tell, because you know, the depressed, lonely child with terrible parents, where did he get his ideas from?
Mm-hmm.
But I made an attempt to tell them once, and it just was awful.
Would you rather try and explain your writing to your parents or come out to your parents if you were gay?
Well, I already did the former, and it was pretty bad.
Mainly
because, one, you tell people about a first book that comes out and I think you're rich and famous. I'm like,
well, that's just the truth.
Fucking, wrong. Two, they insist on, I just tell them the title of it, and, like, their face falls into deep, deep malaise.
I guess it is a somewhat leading title. Like, yeah. You can kind of know what you're getting into with that.
And then after I told them, I was like, you are forbidden from reading it ever. I shouldn't have even told, because I never told, like, before the book came out, I had been writing short fiction and having it published for, like, many, many, many years. That's where a lot of the stories come from, like, small magazines, whatever. So it's, like, it's not like one day I wrote a book and had it published, and, like I had many, many years of it. So I thought it was going to be, like, you know, they were always discouraging about anything I was interested in my whole life. So I thought, like, hey, look, I could tell them about this book that came out. And, it didn't go well at all. They insisted on reading it, and I was like, "Oh, I've read." I was like, "I give you a 1-year moratorium. You cannot read it for 1 year." You know, because I told them about it.
In hopes that they'd forget.
Actually, like, yeah, I told them about it before I gave them the title of it. You know, to kind of feel it out. And they, I was like, "I can't. I'm not going to tell you unless you agree to not read it for 1 year." Because I mean, honestly, if you read it, you know, there are some stories that you would tell what parts of it are not part of my creative process and were just like, I'm taking my own memories. So they would know when they're being referenced. So I hoped that they would just forget about it. But unfortunately, one of my family members, I'm not saying which of my mom or my dad, but one of them followed up on Reddit and was not pleased. So book number two, they have no idea, ever came out.
So is it now less awkward around the family dinner table when you're over there?
Well, now it's kind of, I feel like they just think I'm a quitter. They're like, they probably think you never do it once and one and done, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. It's probably, I'm fucking dumb. I mean, I told my uncle who I'm a little closer to about it, and I'm always afraid at those family reunions. Not family reunions, but I'm always afraid he's gonna fucking blurt something out and reveal it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be sad.
What can you do?
You have siblings?
Yeah, I've got a brother and a sister.
But I guess your stuff isn't like, not, I don't, it's like, no one's gonna be offended by.
Yeah, like it's just, I don't know, it's weird. They'll be like, oh, okay.
I mean, you don't have any family members who are really anti-Nacho or anything.
No. I mean, being anti-Nacho in this day and age is a rough thing to be. But I do not have any anti-Nacho family members. It's true. You're like the Grand Dragon. But
I was trying to think of what the opposite of a Nacho would be in the food world, but I can't. I guess, would it be poutine? Because it's like on the other side of the board. It's like on the northern part of the United, like assuming that America is the center of the world, obviously. That Mexico is south of it. Would the opposite be what's north of it, or would it be on the complete other side of the world? I don't know. Check in to our second episode to find the answer.
It would be dairy free. Yes, we will have all the secrets revealed. Then.
I feel like poutine is the Nacho's rival.
Well, is poutine just like a chili fry, a Canadian chili fry?
No, you know what poutine is?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's french fries and, like, some goop on top, right?
Basically. That's what nachos are.
Yeah, well.
Chips with goop on top.
Yeah, but that's different, because it's chips and not french fries.
Okay, fair point. I feel like if they're not
poutine's like Canadian chili fries. They're rivals. They're like, it's sort of an evolutionary branch off.
That's fair.
But I don't know. I have a, I want to say a Nachos and You, or the Field Guide to Nachos. There's a family tree of how all the nacho-esque foods split off of nachos.
That's cute. Wait, so which is the third? What's the next one coming out?
Maybe this May, if I can get around to finishing it up. But it'll probably
what's it called?
I don't have a name for it yet.
Okay, what else doesn't have a name?
The third nacho book.
What else doesn't have a name? Our podcast, hopefully.
Yes, that's true. Send us a letter to 123 Fake Street with a title name for our podcast.
You know, you almost convinced them, but then they were like, who sends letters anymore?
They got me. Always getting me on those letters.
I have next in the work. I should add that. So the last book came out in October 2015, and people seemed to like it. Soon to be mentioned in Scream Magazine. They told me the review that they published online is going to be featured in Scream Magazine, and they're going to talk about it on the podcast. Same with Starburst Magazine, which is the oldest magazine, I think this is true, the oldest magazine dedicated to horror and science fiction in the Western world, or at least in England, which I guess is the entire Western world to me, because they're the ones who are going to be talking about it. Are going to be talking about it on their podcast and featuring it in their magazine.
And they are east of us geographically. Closer east of us than west of us.
That's true. And I have a series of novellas coming out soon, hopefully, that I hope will get done in a timely fashion. But, I mean, I guess not too timely a fashion, because here we are, chatting away.
When you should be writing away.
Yeah, I don't really write that often because I work. Another thing, people are like, oh, you have books. And it's like, yeah, but I don't make anything close to a living off of them. So I work. I'm a sad toiler bee of a stressful, busy job. So I have a difficult time writing. And I hate writing. We can get to talking about that next time. But writing is very arduous for me because it doesn't flow net. As my many critics point out, writing does not flow for me, you know? It's a very arduous process.
Well, don't spoil all the secrets of our next episode. or a future episode on writing.
Is that the Stephen King episode?
Yes, when we have Stephen King come in and talk about writing.
We should have him on before we bash Owen King.
Yeah.
The loser of the King branch. Who's the other brother? There's Joe Hill.
No, is it Owen King's the one that wrote a book?
Wait, no.
Didn't he?
I don't know. Who
Joe
are they?
Hill wrote books.
Yeah, obviously. Stephen
Owen
King.
Owen King, I think, wrote a book, too. And then there's the third King son that, as far as I know, hasn't done anything.
Oh.
So that guy. Ha!
I mean, I feel like there's a pretty big gulf.
Dollars. What have you done?
I feel like there's a pretty big gulf between Joe Hill and even Owen King.
True.
Like, Joe Hill's alright. I liked Horns. It was alright.
I like me a heart-shaped box and a ghost
story.
Not
what you said last time, you hypocrite. You're already sucking
up. I like heart-shaped box.
What'd you say to me?
I said I didn't like Horns all along.
I know what you said, you liar. You think Joe Hill's gonna come crawling on his knees on this podcast because you're sucking his literary dick on Ghost... What the fuck is the book called? Margin.
20th.
I called it Ghost. I confused it with the Patrick Swayze Demi Moore movie.
Demi Moore, yeah.
No, you said it worked better as a shorter fiction, is that what you said?
Yeah, but I still liked it better than Horns.
Oh,
It did not have a magical treehouse in it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, magic treehouse.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, oh, sorry guys. Sorry I ruined a...
I remember liking Horns.
Book that has
I remember liking Horns. I never read Heart-Shaped Box, but I will say a kind word about his collection, 20th Century Ghosts. There are a couple of stories in there that I really liked. We talked about the one that's non-horror, or about the guy who's on the set of Dawn of the Dead. It's a really good story. There's no horror elements of it. It takes you by surprise. It's emotional. It's good.
Gives you the feels.
That's another thing I think we talked about, is that like I have a problem reading Joe Hill, because he kind of writes in that like lower middle class patois when he's a son of a fucking bagazillionaire, and knowing who he is, like this just seems inauthentic to me. I'm a real
You're burning a lot of bridges today.
I'm not saying he's a bad writer. He's obviously a very, very good writer. I'm just saying for me personally, like I can't read. I mean, maybe I cannot just suspend my disbelief, but I cannot read stories about lower middle class people or people in poverty from a writer who I know is exceedingly wealthy and privileged. Just doesn't ring true to me. You know? Is it just me?
That's the skill of the writing, if they can convey that across.
Oh, well, you win this one.
Yeah, that's right.
My second cheese sandwich argument. Yeah, you're certainly right. I'm not saying it. I should take a step back. I'm not presenting that as this is true and other people should agree with me. I'm saying perhaps this is a handicap of mine, you know?
Yeah, I mean.
Like, for example, if I know of a writer who is exceedingly positive and has children, and then they try and write extremely dark Lovecraftian fiction, I'm like, I know that's not really you, you know? You don't really live that. I think rappers call it keeping it real.
Oh, exactly.
Actually, I think they don't, because I don't
think
anyone
says that
expression
anymore. Bringing it around full circle.
The ghost of Laird Barrett, who's not dead yet, has been hinting to us that we need to end this podcast.
It must be.
We should add that everything we've said is a joke. Joe Hill's great. Laird Barrett is all right. He's good. All the other authors who I can't even remember are fucking fine, whatever cares. I'm sure Poppy C. Bright writes great stuff that we just haven't read.
Yep.
That keeps hidden under her mattress or something. Who else did we insult?
Dean Koontz?
I don't even remember.
I don't know. If you were offended,
insult Dean Koontz.
No? I guess we did both like Phantoms. So, I like a Watchers. I like me a psychic dog and a other psychic murder dog.
Are those Dean Koontz stories?
Yeah. There's like the government experiment. Watchers, that's the one, I think.
I feel like Phantom is the only one I read, and that was pre-Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
I wonder if he saw an uptick in sales after Phantoms was bomb.
I'm positive he did. I feel like there was once comment that like, even Dean Koontz gets a reputation where people feel like it's okay to mock and belittle his work, and so people are naturally like, they become inclined to dislike him, even though if you just put Stephen King on the front of one of his books, people would look past some of its flaws a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Stephen King's great too, so I'm not saying he's flawed, you know what I'm saying. People just look at Stephen King. I think people just compare Dean Koontz unfavorably to Stephen King.
Because when you go to the bookstore, they're right next to each other on the shelf.
That's true, that might be it. Yeah.
Back in college, my friend and I were writing a bunch of horror short stories to be in a collection, and we were going to go with a pen name, Eric Cole, because it would go between Stephen King and Dean Koontz at the bookstore.
That's smart.
I know. We could have made millions on Small Town, but...
And then you just have to kill off all the K competition that arises.
Yep. Anyone else that goes in between there. Or cruising for a bruising. Perhaps a better send-off than that.
Yes.
So, this is Derek.
Do you have a last name?
Presumably you say this.
Oh, okay. All right, so thanks for listening, everybody. It's J.R. Hamantashian and Derek Sotak.
Derek Sotak.
I just stepped right all over you there.
Real polite.
This is obviously the getting all the bugs out episode.
What we call inaugural.
Inaugural, once you listen to the next 20 stellar episodes.
Yep, solid gold.
You're going to forget this one ever happened. This is going to be a fan favorite one day.
Yep, definitely.
I mean, since we're our only two fans, I already love it.
I mean, this is possibly the best podcast I've ever listened to.
This is also the first podcast I've ever listened to. So, by definition, it's true.
What is a podcast?
All right, so I'm going to hit the button that stops this now.
Okay, see you all next episode.